So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Good evening. This is Stacey Trisankos here filling in for Timory while she is still on maternity leave, enjoying her new little bundle of baby girl. I've missed you, and it's really good to be back here and spend an hour talking about very important trending topics that are, I think, that's the beauty of our faith. Whatever is in fashion of the day or in the news cycle. I don't know what could be in the news cycle this week. I don't know. But sometimes there seems to be a lot of things in the news cycle. It's really nice to have that anchor of our Catholic faith that no matter what is trending among the people we live with in the world today, there are always these foundational truths that we can come back to and launch off from there into something transcendent. And remember that whatever we're going through in this life is really, it's all a journey to eternity in heaven. That is our hope. That is our purpose for every day in life. So it's neat talking about. I always love analyzing what's going on in the world through the lens of faith. That's what a living faith is. In the show today, this is Marriage Thursday, and we're going to talk about marriage. It's always, so I like to tell you and remind you often because I talk a lot about faith and science, and for me, that is a little bit of a comfortable wheelhouse because I don't have to get very personal. You know, I can talk about atoms all day and I don't have to throw myself into it much. Talking about marriage is very different, but it is obviously a much bigger issue in anyone's who's married's life than atoms and molecules. So it is great to talk about marriage, but sometimes I struggle with it a little bit because I'm not going to like overshare. But I am drawing on my experience. It's something I've worked with a lot of young writers and helped them get their start in the Catholic world. And if you're interested in that, let me know. Contact me on social media or something. I can give you some pointers. But I've helped a lot of young Catholics get their start writing. And I always tell them, you know, you got to find that fine line between oversharing and drawing on your experience. So you don't want to. So anyway, if I seem to say glowing, wonderful things and talk about marriage like I have it all figured out, I assure you, it's one of the hardest things I've ever done. I'm telling you the good stuff I've learned and the things that have worked. And I like to test things out, and I have definitely tested out these things that we choose to talk about here. So today in the Marriage Thursday, the first segment of the show, I'm going to talk about something that's, I guess, taboo. I'm going to talk about miscarriage, okay? Miscarriage is a very difficult thing in marriage. So miscarriage in marriage. And just want to dive into some of the things that we might hear in the modern world that make it sometimes difficult to deal with. And like I said, stick to the foundation, but launch into the transcendent. There's just so much beauty in the truth that the Catholic Church gives us to deal with miscarriage. So I'm going to talk about that first. If there are little ears in the room, I'm a mom of seven and a grandmother of six and counting. So I totally get that. I totally get that miscarriage is not something that little people can understand. However, I also am a big believer in teaching our children to search for truth unflinchingly. So these are concepts that I have introduced with my kids from a very young age, because fundamentally understanding the mystery and sanctity of human life from the very possible first beginning we can even start to get at with science, understanding the significance of that is a child that should have a mother and father, that helps your kids as they grow just to realize, A, they're loved that much, and B, they need to start thinking about what it means to be good parents long before they even start thinking about dating. So it's about getting the truth. So I want to give you some information. Of course, there's some science there, because when I had to deal with miscarriage, it was very much scientific in my mind. So a little bit of taboo there, but appropriately so. Then also want to talk about St. Padre Pio and his recipe for marriage. So I said last week, my recipe for marriage and my with my husband is something that we developed over the years. It's very, very complicated. It's called just show up for coffee. Because there have been periods when we've been dealing with a lot of heartbreak and a lot of difficulty and a lot that we were forging through. And no matter how mad we might be at each other some days, I don't know why he ever was mad at me, but no, I'm kidding. No matter how mad, no matter how difficult it ever got, we showed up in the kitchen for coffee. And no matter what kind of trials we were going through, he always made me coffee and put my cream and sugar in it exactly the way I like it. And whatever was going on, we at least had that 10 or 15 minutes where we just sort of processed things. Wasn't always hard, but we always knew we were going to be back the next day. And it just became a secret. So I want to talk about St. Padre Pio's recipe for marriage. It's not much more complicated than that, but it's delightful, and there's an actual real-life story that goes with it. So stay tuned for that in the second segment. And the last thing I want to talk about today before we get into the Holy Rosary after this show is prudence. Okay, see, when I say that word, it just sounds so icky. Prudence in marriage. Prudence in marriage. It is a virtue, of course, and virtue, prudence, and some of the parts of prudence that St. Thomas Aquinas goes through are extremely useful tools, formulas, that you can kind of find hints of it when you read psychology magazines or marriage therapy, but just getting down to the basics of what it actually is and how it was actually worked out from Aristotle and then by many people later and then especially by St. Thomas Aquinas for the church. There's actually some tools there that are better. They're like the gold standard that is echoed in pop psychology today. So I want to get past this idea that prudence might be prudish and talk about what it actually means, authentic prudence, because why would I talk about that? Because like I've said many times, when I realized that the human person isn't just atoms and molecules, being a chemist, that there's actually a rational soul there with intellect and free will, and I understood what prudence is, I was like, hey, I get this being human thing and this being in relationship thing. And it really gave me pause to stop and think and understand. So going through those things, back to miscarriage in marriage, okay? A lot could be said about this topic, but specifically, there is a statistic out there that kind of searching for truth drives us right down to something that I think we have to deal with as Catholics. And it gets at this statement right here. We embrace life. Like the church tells us to embrace life, to be open to life. And we do that because we don't fear death. But there are statistics out there, and they're based on scientific studies where they measure the hormone levels in a woman. And you know how HCG, you can tell when a woman is pregnant. That's one of the earliest tests you can do because the HCG levels change. And then they, if there's a miscarriage, they change again. They go down. And that's one of the earliest indicators that you might be going to have a miscarriage. Well, there are scientific studies where they did measure that in a group of women, and they knew at very earliest possible moment when the woman was pregnant, they also knew how many of them miscarried. And the numbers there are shocking. And I was not prepared for this when I became Catholic and open to life and started defending human life and protesting abortion And someone said to me, you know, there are scientific studies that say like 2/3 of all fertilized eggs, zygotes, 2/3 of all conceptions don't make it to birth. So the point was, what's the big deal about abortion? And I just remember being floored by that. I was like, speechless. Okay. We have to know how to answer that. And it scared me. It made me panic because I thought, wait a minute. What does that mean in my own life? Like, has that ever happened to me where there were times when there was a conception and I never knew about it? And, you know, not being Catholic most of my life, there probably were. And it's a lot to get your head around. But push, push, push. I'm talking about pushing back to as far as you can go with the logic here. The church tells us that children are gifts. Okay. Children are gifts. So if this happens, and let me just emphasize, these are scientific studies. Having practiced science in a laboratory and in the university and in an industry, I'll be the first to tell you, science is not about facts. Science is about probing into the unknown, trying to get some idea, okay? So it's not like there are little Martians in the mother's tummy, and whenever there's a new conception, they send a signal out, hey, we got a live one down here. It's not like you really know exactly when. I mean, that's a beautiful thought, right? Nobody knows exactly the moment any of us popped into existence except God alone. But when it happens, those studies do say that a number of implantations, so there's a conception and then the embryo implants, and then about 1/3 of those don't make it to birth by natural reasons. Talk about natural death. There are studies with in vitro fertilization, which is immoral, but they do have studies on this where the fertilized egg, the zygote, doesn't even live long enough to make it to implantation. So you can't measure that with HCG levels in the woman. But if you put those statistics together, it does add up to about 2/3, which means most humans who are conceived don't make it to birth, if those studies are true. So like I said, science is not about facts. It's about probing into the unknown, trying to get some idea. Anyway, what that meant for us in our marriage, when we knew we had miscarriages, we had five miscarriages. We had 4 teenage daughters, 2 miscarriages, a little boy, and then 3 miscarriages after that. And so I had to talk to my children about that. But here's the thing, guys. If this disturbing statistic is true, if there are children being conceived that we might not know about, what could be more beautiful, more satisfying than knowing about it? Okay? Even if they don't make it to birth. It was the Catholic Church's teaching on natural family planning, which, you know, natural family planning kind of gets a bad rap. Let's just say it was the Church's teaching on understanding your own biology and chemistry that taught me this. So instead of shrinking in fear from a disturbing statistic, instead of becoming complacent and saying, oh, well, most of them die, what's the big deal? Instead of any of that, it pushes us as Catholics to say, wait a minute, that's even more reason to understand my body's cycle, husband and wife. That's even more reason to understand what's going on with your fertility. Because even though I had 5 miscarriages, and even though it broke my heart, and, you know, I guess anybody who's been through it knows, I just, moment of silence, you just can't put it into words. Even though it broke my heart, even though my husband didn't know how to comfort me in those moments, because it's very difficult for the father, what we were left with when all of that passed is this. We knew about those children because on the very first possible moment that I could detect there's something going on there, I was able to pick the phone up on the day that my pregnancy test told me there was a baby. And I called my husband, even when I knew that there was a very good chance the baby wasn't going to make it, that it was going to be another miscarriage. I still was able to pick the phone up, call my husband and say, "Sweetheart, there's a new little Trisenkos in the world." And that was everything. And we told our children, we told our family. We didn't wait, and I do understand some people wait because you need to, if you got to deal with that, you need to deal with it privately. But by that point in our life, because I was over 40, we wanted to celebrate every moment we could. And so it was bittersweet. But if I hadn't learned what the Catholic Church told me, I would have never known about my own children's existence. Do you see that? And that is a vastly different thing than the feminist, atheist, abortion culture tells women. It tells women, hey, don't worry about it. You can't figure out what's going on in your body. Just take these pills. Use these devices. Don't worry about it. Or if you miscarry, it's a chemical pregnancy. Don't worry about it. No, the church drags us down to that very quiet little truth. That's everything. Because what we have now, my youngest son is 10 years old. My whole family, our kids, they all know there were 5 little Trisenkoi that are forever part of our family. And so when we pray for them. And that's just a great thing. It's beautiful. And that's what I wanted to share with you. I mean, they are little family members already praying for us, waiting for us. And we do absolutely believe, as heartbreaking as it is in this life, we'll all be together. And so, you know, when I pray the rosary and I finish, I say a Hail Mary for every one of my kids. And so it's a long list. I say Hail Mary for my godchildren. I say Hail Marys for my daughter-in-law and son-in-law. And my list of saying Hail Marys for the children God's entrusted to me just keeps growing and growing, up to 6 grandchildren now, just a whole bunch of those things. So that's the message I want to give you. It is a joyful thing, even in the most heartbreaking thing. And even when science comes up with statistics that are like, what? We don't have to be afraid of it. We don't have to be afraid of the truth, because if the truth is that there are way more humans conceived than ever make it to birth, then fine, we'll just see them all in heaven. And I know at one time I was like, are there like embryos walking around in heaven? No, I don't know. See, that's like angels on the head of a pin kind of thing. We don't know. But if there's a human body, there's a human soul. We have to believe, because what else can we say? And it's a nice thought, and it makes you think beyond just the world that you live in today. So we're getting ready to go to a break. When we come back, I want to talk more about Padre Pio's secret recipe for marriage that is also very beautiful. I'm Stacey Trisenkos. See you in a little bit.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to Trending with Timory. Only today you've got Trending and Tradition with Trisenkos. So I'm This is Stacy Trusenko's here filling in for Timory while she's still on maternity leave. She'll be back with us very soon, though, I understand. So stay tuned for that. I know y'all are missing her by this point. If you would like to call into the show, the number is 888-914-9149. And Timory will be here tomorrow, actually. So the number again is 888-914-9149. Timory will be here tomorrow for a special Roe v. Wade anniversary show. Big day in our country. A lot of news in the news right now about abortion and what's going to happen. So you don't want to miss that. We were talking before the break about St. Padre Pio and his secret for marriage. There's a beautiful story. Love these stories. About a married couple that knew him. So they knew him when they were young, little children. And this kind of a whole story of their lives together that was influenced by who was then a future saint. You know, he was alive. So the story goes over their whole lifetime, 60 years. They were close friends of the priest. And the story is about how his advice, his recipe for their marriage worked. And you could probably guess it has something to do with prayer. And if that's what you're thinking right. He had a daily ritual, and he said a lot of prayers, but he specifically recited the Chaplet of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And he offered for the intentions, he offered this chaplet for all the intentions of those who entrusted themselves to his prayer. So it was a really good thing to be a close friend of his because he would be praying for you. Bishop Strickland, I work for him here in the Diocese of Tyler, and I take advantage of that often and say, Your Excellency, would you please pray for my family? And he does, and that's very powerful. But there were indeed many people back in those days that asked Padre Pio for intercessions, for their troubles, their difficulties. A couple of people were Giovanni and Paola Siena. So they were children when they first met him. It began in the 1920s in San Giovanni Rotondo, where Padre Pio lived. Giovanni, the man, met the mystic for the first time in 1928 on the occasion of his first Holy Communion. He was a little boy. He was 8 years old. He grew up. He worked in the mines. He worked as a teacher and a journalist, and he ended up joining the team of the hospital complex that was founded by Padre Pio there where he lived. And he met this Holy Father again. He met him. And so at the time, Paola, so here's where the woman comes in, who would be Giovanni's future wife, was 21 years old. So they're young adults now, both of them. They both went regularly to visit Padre Pio. And they wrote about it later, and that's why we're talking about it now. She would testify later that it was thanks to his intercession in praying this chaplet of the Sacred Heart of Jesus that she was cured of her depression and cured of serious lung problems. But the story doesn't end there. She felt called to marriage, to the vocation of marriage. And she asked Padre Pio one day, like we do, many of us do, when we have spiritual advisors, she asked him for advice. And he replied to her with a question, what is your deepest desire? What is your heart desire? And Paola answered him, and she said she really wanted to start a family. And she loved children, and she dreamed of having children. And so he prayed for her. He prayed that good God would allow her to meet a good young man. And he gave her this advice. This is the secret recipe. Go to confession regularly and receive communion every day. Every day. So not just when you're obligated, but every day. So as the story goes, living happily ever after, I'll talk more about that in a minute. She noticed that this young man, she started to notice that Paolo had Paolo started to notice that Giovanni, the young man, had an interest in her, and they would cross paths as they would visit Padre Pio. They got engaged. They agreed to pray together every day, and they agreed, like many young couples preparing for the sacrament of matrimony do, they entrusted their future marriage to God. In 1950, they got married. They celebrated Mass, and Padre Pio was the celebrant. And at the end, he finished and said, "Be happy, be happy, be happy." That's part of the secret, too. Just be happy. They had been married for a few months, and they met hardship. They learned they would not be able to have children, that Paola was infertile. And they again went to Padre Pio and asked him, "What should we do?" And he said, "I'll pray the chaplet of the Sacred Heart of Jesus every day for you." So he same thing. He's going to pray for them, the Sacred Chaplet of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. By the way, if you look that up, it is a there's beads that go with it. They have a set of five beads that are six each, and then three more beads where we usually see on the rosary for faith, hope, and love. So that's 33 beads in all, 5 times 6 plus 3. 33 beads in all, and those are to represent the years of Jesus's life. So look that up, Sacred Heart Chaplet. So anyway, he prays this for them, and he tells them something that might have sounded a little crazy. "You'll see, you'll see, you'll have as many children as the choirs of angels." That and by that he meant nine choirs of angels. Not long after that, they had a baby girl, but she immediately fell seriously ill and had, according to the doctors, no chance of survival. The couple was devastated, and they asked Padre Pio to pray for their daughter on her deathbed, and they were granted another miracle. He reassured them. He was so confident, "The child won't die." And sure enough, the child was cured. After this miracle, they went on and had 8 more children, just as had been predicted. Doesn't that give you chills? And they were close to Padre Pio for the rest of his life until his death in 1968. They did as he said. They went to confession. They went to daily Mass. They kept his advice about their marriage, and they prayed together. And they wrote a story about it. And Paola, the woman, said, "After 60 years of marriage, I can say that Padre Pio's recipe, the Chaplet of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, works. Giovanni and I love each other as much as on the first day." It's a beautiful story. And, you know, you might be thinking, well, it sounds a little bit fairy tale-ish. And you know, of course we know we're not always granted miracles. When you got to understand, too, when you tell a story that spans 60 years and you tell it in like 6 minutes, of course we're leaving out the full impact of some of the difficulties and the fact that there may have been times when with those 9 kids there was plenty of drama and plenty of heartache and plenty of hardship, and that I'm sure that along the way they probably thought at times that they were going to fall into despair and give up and not make it, but they did. And it occurred to me something that Mr. T, that's what I call my husband, Jose Tresencos, Mr. T. Mr. T and I were talking yesterday in the kitchen during our coffee time, and this story reminded me of something that he said, because he was telling our kids, I know you're young, but if you want to really understand commitment, you got to stick with it for a long time. And, you know, when it comes out your mouth, you're like, well, duh. But think about it. That is a tautology, but it is as true gets. And his point to them was, you're not really going to understand what commit. You know, you don't understand commitment when you're 8 years old. You don't understand. Our son is in basketball and doesn't always want to go to practice. He's 10. You don't really under. You know, we make him be committed even if he doesn't want to go. And he doesn't always understand commitment. But Jose was telling him, you will understand it, but you got to stick with it for a long time. And so that, you know, that worked. That worked. But I was telling him later, I'm like, sweetheart, you know why that worked? That worked because our kids have seen us stick with it for a long time. Like, they may not know what commitment is, but they've seen it in us. And we are, you know, there have been times when he and I, Mr. T and I, didn't think we were going to make it. There have been times we didn't think we were going to make it. And there have been times when, I promise you, God tapped us on the shoulder and just whispered, I'm still here. Stay committed. And we did. And, you know, we're getting older now. We're past all that. But that's what I'm saying to you from the other side. Marriage. If you want to understand what it means to be committed in marriage, you've got to get to that 60-year point, if God grants you that many years together, and you'll look back and you'll understand, ah, that's what it is. Say your prayers, keep going, don't give up, persevere. And if you want to just get even bigger here, this is one reason why divorce does not just break a bond between a man and woman. It breaks children and it breaks societies. And I know that gets said a lot, but that's what we're talking about here. If a child doesn't have parents who stayed together and stayed committed for a long time, like this couple did in the Padre Pio story, how is that child going to know what commitment looks like? How's that child going to know that when he or she grows up and maybe gets married, how's that child going to know what it means to persevere through the difficulties, to just keep praying, to just get through the hard time, to find a way to, I know this is really hard, but find a way to forge that bond with the one you love? They won't know. And so they might give up. And then you've got another generation that doesn't understand commitment. And then you've got that generation having kids that don't. And so it gets all messed up. It breaks the kid. It breaks the community. It breaks the whole population. So that is why you have to keep going and find something. So if you're not, he and I have been married 18 years. If you haven't been married that long, listen to the people who say, just persevere. And I don't mean to gloss over the problems. I am not glossing over the problems. It's just that we don't have 3 weeks to sit here and talk about it. I don't mean to gloss over those. It's just setting it on the shelf because that's another issue. But there are ways to deal with them. And it all begins by going to confession, going to communion, going to Mass, kneeling before the Lord of the universe, and giving it to Jesus, giving it over to God, and saying, I've been really mad before. There have been times. When there's one time I remember, so Jose and I got married on 01, 02, 03, because he's a mathematician and I'm a chemist, and we were total nerds. We were like, 01, 02, 03, that's a good day to start our life together, ha, ha, ha. And we got married, but we didn't get married in the church because I wasn't Catholic. And we tried, and they were like, it's going to take a year. And I was like, well, I'll see you later then, because I don't want to wait that long. And, you know, long story short, I converted, and we did celebrate our sacrament of matrimony. When we celebrated the sacrament of matrimony, we received some gifts. Like, Jose got me a book, and somebody else got him the same book for no reason, that we didn't understand why. It just happened to be that we had the same little devotional book where you read a scripture every day. And this was neat. This was God tapping us on the shoulder. We selected scripture for our Mass, for our sacrament of matrimony, and it was Isaiah 61:10. And then later, for some random reason, Jose and I have the same little devotional book, and he called me from work one day, and he said, look what the scripture is on January 2nd, because we were married on January 2nd of 2003. Look what the scripture is on January 2nd in this little devotional book. And it was the same scripture that we chose for our sacrament of matrimony Mass, our matrimonial Mass. And so, like, we actually sat down in the kitchen and we tried to calculate the chances of that happening. And it is It's infinitesimally small. Infinitesimally small. Like, there's no chance that happened. It just was a little true. But that got us through a lot of hard times. We're like, okay, God is definitely watching. We have to figure this out. We have to figure out how to get through all of this stuff. And I'm going to give you some formulas for how to figure out all of that when we come back after the break. If you'd like to call, 888-914-9149. I'm Stacy Tresenkos.
Relevant Radio is supported by CatholicSingles.com and the Catholic Singles app, the Catholic dating community for single men and women to meet other single Catholics through interactive polls and personalized matches. CatholicSingles.com, genuinely Catholic.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hello, welcome back to the show. This is Stacy Tresenkos. For this last segment, we're going to get very nerdy in a Catholic kind of way. I first just want to say, before we start talking all prudishly about prudence, thank you for the feedback. I meant to say earlier, I got quite a few very nice messages from some people. I'm on Facebook, Stacy Tresenkos. I've been on Facebook since Facebook was only for the young college people, like since 2008. So that's kind of where I tend to hang out in social media space. And now my kids tell me Facebook's just for old people. So I don't know what happened there. But I'm on Facebook, Stacy Tresenkos, and I'm also on Twitter, same name. You can get in touch with me there or find our website. I am executive director for the St. Philip Institute. I have an email address there, and I'm also recently doing Children of God for Life with my husband, because we've decided to devote some of our week to fighting the use of aborted children in research. And never thought we would end up there, but we are loving working together from home. I really never thought we'd be able to do that, but it's forged our marriage even closer, because I'm learning things about him that I never knew he could do, like business stuff. So really good. But anyway, thank you for connecting with me and letting me know. I appreciate that. And if you'd like to call in, the lines are still open, 888-914-9149. Okay, so this is one of my favorite topics, prudence, because it was one of those things. Again, I'm always walking into this from being a chemist and then becoming Catholic. I can't help it. It's just the way my life is organized. But I was like, get out of town. Because, I mean, I was already so excited to find out I had a soul and that I could, that intellect and free will are real things. Because in chemistry, they're not, right? And so I was excited about that. I was excited about learning what relationships are and communion and heaven and God and angels. Oh, my goodness. Angels just like floored me. I'm like, we're surrounded by elements and angels all the time. It's like so cool to be alive. But learning about virtue was another thing, okay? Virtue is cool, man. It rocks, because these are like formulas. You know, you have formulas when you bake cookies. You have formulas when you make stuff in the lab. It's formulaic, the way the church has articulated how you're supposed to have right reason to choose right actions. Because all my life before being Catholic, I'm like, I really want to do the right thing. I didn't know why I wanted to do the right thing. I didn't know why it mattered. I just had that desire in me, and then it made sense when I became Catholic. But then when I said, God, I'm signing up, I will do the right thing, then I had a real hard time, because I didn't always know how to figure out what it was. And I got really frustrated. That is what the cardinal virtues help us do. And this is like, you know, I teach some catechism classes now, and I'm always like, these kids are so lucky to be learning this stuff, because I wish I had known that virtue is a good habit that helps us do good and avoid evil, and that there's a difference between the cardinal or natural virtues. They're things we have to work for, things we have to practice, just like you can't play the clarinet unless you practice and get good at it. You're just not born doing it. And there are supernatural virtues that we're given directly by God without they're gifts. We don't have to work for them. Faith, hope, and love, faith, hope, and charity are the supernatural virtues given to our soul at baptism. And so I understood that. And I understood then, well, you've got to have faith, hope, and love to be able to do the cardinal virtues of prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. But then, even better, see the formulas here? Even better, you really have to nail prudence if you want to have a chance of doing justice, and if you want to have a chance of practicing fortitude and temperance. Because if you don't start with prudence, you're not going to get those other ones right. It's the reason, St. Thomas Aquinas says, of there being the other virtues being virtues at all. So you got to know how to use right reason, or you're not going to be able to figure out what's just, or when you should fight and when you should run, or when you should have that donut or don't have that donut. Like, you got to have right reason. And it fits with the theological virtues, because you can't have authentic prudence. You can't practice authentic prudence if it's not guided by faith, hope, and love. So that's why you have to be Catholic, because if you're just being atheist, then you're trying to do the right thing, but you're just kind of like running off a cliff, because you don't have the light of grace guiding you towards a purpose in life. You're just like, I'm going to do the right thing till I die. That's not very satisfying. So it all fits together is what I'm saying. So I want to share with you, because in marriage, this has been a saving knowledge for us. It's for me. And I think my husband appreciates it when I stop and I'm like, okay, what was the formula for prudence again? I need to take a deep breath and think this through. And it's not just emotion. It's not just what I feel. It's reasoning. And so there are actually things in it. So prudence gets a bad rap in our society, right? Prudence is like, oh, that prudish woman or that prudent businessman who kind of portrays them as bookish subterfuge or weak or something like that. That's not what it means. Prudence is right reason applied to action. I'm quoting Aquinas, who quotes Aristotle. This is in the Summa Theologiae 2:2, 47:2. You can look it up, just where the treatise on the virtues. It's all there. So it means prudence is right reason applied to action, but there are parts of prudence. There are steps along the way in practicing it. And I notice now that I know this, I see it in pop psychology all the time. I see these things coming up, but it's never articulated with as much clarity and as much beauty as the church articulates it. So I just think you should go, you know, you should have the real thing instead of the knockoff version that we find in pop culture. So there are various components to practicing prudence. There are 8 that I keep in my little list of formulas, and they go in order. I'm going to go through them really quick, but I will post this article. We can post it on the website, or I can post it on my Facebook page or something to find it. Or you could just look up the Summa Theologiae and you'll find it there too. But I made a summary of it because it helps me. Memory. The first one, going through them very quickly, you have to have a recollection of what's happening, of your experiences, that conforms to reality. Oh man, that is so hard. So I have 4 teenage daughters right now, and I'm constantly talking to them about this, because there's an art here. There's a practice. You have to practice. Memory is not just not like the neurological storage in your brains. It's not memory like we're talking about computers. We're talking about your experiences. Okay, we're not animals. Remember, we're not just animals like a dog learning trick. We are creatures with rational souls, and our experiences in our life form our memories. Okay, and so to perfect the memory, to conform it to reality, we have to A, so this is memory, part A, more formulas. Form a picture in your mind of the series of events. Now, I'm telling you, wives, husbands, this ain't easy, okay? Form a picture in your mind. So say you had a fight and you need to prudently figure out what the right action is. You know, you got to use right reason and figure out the right action, but you're stewing, okay? You have to force yourself to form a picture in your mind of the series of events objectively, okay? Don't just look at it through your rose-colored glasses where you didn't do anything wrong and it's all his fault. You've got to look at it objectively. You've got to distance yourself from it. You've got to look at it through someone else's eyes as if you're seeing the event for the first time. This is called imagination. You've got to go back and imagine the real event that happened. You got to be honest, okay? You got to be honest. And then you need to make a mental note of the order of events. So if you're mad, it helps to sit down and write out what actually happened. What was the order? Because you know how we just pick and choose to remember certain things that make us look good and the other one look bad? Uh-huh. Yeah. St. Thomas Aquinas knows that too, and he's telling you don't do that. It will help to retain the correct memory if you write down the steps. Third, under memory, be anxious. That's right. Be anxious, okay? Because anxiety is not always a bad thing. Anxiety is the body's way of informing us that we need to think more about something in earnest. So if something's niggling at you, if something's bothering you, these are things we talk about over coffee in the morning. If a memory is making you anxious and you've done your best to recollect it accurately, you probably need to confront it, okay? You need to at least work it out in your own mind, and you might need to talk to your husband or wife about it. So the first step in confronting it honestly is to remember it correctly. And then the fourth part under memory is to reflect on the set of memories you retain. That means once you've done all that work to remember it, write it down in order that it happened, and figure out what you're anxious about, then you need to reflect. Okay? Follow those four steps for memory. The next part, going really fast now, is understanding. Understanding means to stand under, okay? It means once you've done all of that work about reality, you need to subject yourself to the objective truth, okay? And try to understand. So don't go in, talk and say, I'm going to figure out what the right thing is to do. And that right thing is to do is that you need to tell me you're sorry because you were being a jerk. No, that's not what it means. It means you need to form conclusions based on your accurate memories. You need to understand. You need to try to see with an interior light of clarity. The next one, number three, is docility. Docility doesn't mean you lay down and be a doormat. Docility means you be willing to learn. Means you be willing to listen to the other person, okay? Because you don't know everything. None of us know everything. A lot of the fights between me and my husband are because I thought I knew why he did what he did, and he did it just to make me mad. And so when I got rid of all that and I was just able to listen to him, most of the time he was just trying to make me happy. So that gets all messed up. You see how beautiful this is? The next one is shrewdness. Shrewdness means make a decision quickly when you need to, okay? Some people are like, I'm still thinking. No, there comes a time when you need to actually take action. Reason is the next one, and I'm going to post these. Reason is the next one, and that means not reason, the noun, but reasoning. Use reason. Reason through a process, meaning that you need to think through it in an order. You need to calm the nerves. You need to settle the glitter in your brain. That's what I tell my teenagers. Take a few deep breaths, let the glitter settle, like when you have glitter in one of those globes and it shake it up and it's all fluffing around. Let the glitter settle. That's literally what happens in your brain. Your neurons are firing and you're too emotional. If you want to reason and be rational, let the glitter settle. And that all comes after the other parts I talked about. And the last part, number eight, comes with maturity. But you need to develop a foresight. So foresight means when you've tried to remember, you've tried to reason, you've tried to understand, you've been open to learning things docilely. It means, and then you make a decision and you do the action. So prudence doesn't mean just thinking. Prudence means make a decision, and then you actually have to do it. Also realize that you might look back the next day or the next year or 60 years and you might say, I didn't do that. I could have done better. That's part of it. It's a cycle. So you've got to have foresight to try to see into the future, knowing you don't ever actually know what the future is going to bring, but you got to do your best and you got to be willing to start all over again with memory and understanding and work through the process. So that's what prudence is. It's a formula that can help you in everyday life. And until you master those things, you don't ever get to the point where you can actually say, this is just, this is unjust. This is the time to be courageous. This is the time to keep my mouth shut. This is the time to indulge a little bit. This is the time to refrain. You don't get to that point unless you practice this prudence. And it's all right there in the Summa. I am not kidding you. It's in the Summa. It's a formula for living a life where you can figure out what the right thing is to do. And I just think it's so beautiful and so critical for our marriages. I will be back next week. Timmery will be here tomorrow for the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. I enjoyed this hour with you very, very much. I appreciate it. Thank you. Stacey Tresenkos. See you next week.